Hey guys, this is Kirk Smith. This February 1st through 7th, I will be performing at the Perth Fringe Festival in beautiful downtown Perth. Come see my one-man show entitled Rice Krispies with Ketchup, A Comedian's Guide to Autism. I will be performing downtown at the Elephant in the Wheelbarrow for 7 nights. You can get tickets at fringeworld.co.au. If you live in Perth, I hope to see you there. And enjoy this week's episode of Autastic.
We are recording.
It's going to be an outtake.
Hey, everybody. Oh, welcome back to another episode of Autastic, Comedian's Guide to Autism. I am Graham Kay, and over there is...
Kirk Smith.
Oh, yeah, Kirk Smith.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm great. Good to see you again, man.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
You. Yeah, Happy New Year to you as well. If you're new to the podcast, I have an autistic brother who is 31, and Kirk has an autistic son who is 17.
Yeah, that's right. 17. Old man. Yeah,
he's a big man.
Yeah, he is. Yeah,
and you may have noticed there is a lovely female voice that is the very talented and smart Jennifer Bielander, everybody. She has been on this podcast before, and she is back. So welcome back, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming. We appreciate it.
Jennifer is the author and lead performer in her one-woman play called Momatism, which ran at the Edinburgh Fringe a year ago. If you don't know, Edinburgh Fringe is the biggest fringe festival in the world. It is a month long. She did a month of shows there.
It's crazy.
And before that, she did the Bath Festival, which is just outside of London, which I just learned off air. Kirk knew. He was like, it's about 2 hours west of London.
That's impressive.
They have a lot of Roman baths there. I'm like, what? Where? And I also just found out Kirk lived in the UK.
It's a long time ago, but yeah.
Yeah.
About 15 years ago, yeah.
It's so like strange when you start to get friends that are in their 40s. They're like, wow, they have so many adventures. It seems like not enough. Like, how do they find the time? Like, oh, yeah. In his life.
Yeah, he's a decade older. That's right. He's 1,000 years old. I realized, too, I gave you old man instructions.
Go west.
It's west. Because most people hate it when you say west, north, south. Like, don't tell me west. Say, who does that bit? Lachlan Patterson has a bit about,
yeah,
you go east, 7 clicks. What's a click? The war's over, sir. Yeah.
Nate Bargatze has a good one, too. He's like, go northeast. He's like, great. Well, I left my compass back in sixth grade, so maybe you could.
I laughed with the punch. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's fine.
I have a hard time with that when the sun goes down.
Yeah.
I can't find where the sun is. I don't know where west is.
Well, I don't know anything about time. Me and Graham were talking about this. Like, no. Everything in the past is in the past. Like, I can't remember if it's 2 months
Peter's
ago.
Like that, my brother.
6 months ago. It's before.
5 minutes, before. 5 years, same thing.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
but directions easy. I saw it on a map once, so I know that where I'm at, that's north. So it's like, so that means that's east. I don't know.
Yeah,
I saw it once on a map.
I saw it once on a map, a paper map.
It's that simple. Yeah.
It was a long time ago. I unfurled the map on the hood of my car, and then I knew.
I put the compass in one corner
when orienteering to the Bath region. Yeah, so basically the we're just going to do one big topic du jour, and that's going to be the bulk of the episode. It's going to be art.
This is a special episode.
It's a special episode. They're all special, but this one is extra special.
This one's a little out of the norm, though.
Yeah,
for people that like the structure.
Yeah, we're sort of deviating from the regular structure. But we're basically just going to, cuz we have our guest here, we want to take full advantage of Jennifer. That came out wrong. And
this anyway, show is turning into a different kind of podcast.
It is. But anyway, we basically want to talk about art in autism, both from people who are autistic and also people who are affected by autism.
Yeah, I think like that's what we do, right?
That's what we do.
Art as a way to talk about autism.
Would you consider this podcast art?
Well, it's not science.
No, we discuss it. We don't know what it is. It's something.
Every week we say it's not science.
It's something.
Well, the show, my show that we're doing Wednesday, it'll already be done by the time we come out. It's definitely art. We're doing stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You've done it twice, I think, right? Or at least once.
I've done it once.
That's definitely art. Stand-up's definitely art, and we're using art to talk about autism. You're doing it this week, Jennifer.
I am.
I'm excited. It's
That's great. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's a fun show. Very good show.
It's going to be fun.
Very excited about it.
And this girl, so we have it in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And so this article came out in the spectrumnews.org, and it's Laronica Hawkins. She does a cartoon. The title is Artist with Autism Illustrates Their, quote, Invisible Disability. And then she does a series of cartoons about how smells bother her and noises. And it's really interesting. And I think it looks like it's a young lady doing this, probably isn't an adult doing these cartoons. It looks like it's an opportunity for her to speak about how she feels, and maybe it is an adult because she talks about working,
a young adult, but anyway, it's interesting because what I like about it is I think she does it seems to me from the write-up and from the cartoons is the point of it is to teach neurotypical people what it's like to be in their head.
Yeah.
And to sort of bring visibility to what she calls
exactly.
An invisible disability. So it does help me, actually, when I look at these cartoons and drawings. Like, of course, that would be annoying.
Yeah,
and I think one of the things with this particular cartoon, she talks about what I talk about in my show,
mm-hmm.
sensory defensiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So things like smells really attack your olfactory system. But because of the autism, it's a heightened sensation.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens where it's not just annoying when somebody has a lot of cologne or perfume. It's not just annoying. It's painful.
Painful. Yeah.
You know, and that's the kind of things like, you know, when somebody has really heavy cologne and you go,
No, I have a real problem with air freshener.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I really don't like it. To me, it smells like chemicals.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know this sounds gross, but I'd rather smell a BO most of the time than if you're just going to spray up a toilet. It's like, oh my goodness. No, I don't want to smell that. Yeah. Open a window, but.
But it is. It's a painful sensation when it's heightened to that level. So that's one of the things I found interesting in her comic strip was that it was showing it in a way that we can't do it in real life.
Right.
There's a little picture of what the air freshener looks like attacking her.
Yeah.
Yep.
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 It is interesting. And do you feel like your son, how old is your son, by the way?
He's 19.
And what is his name?
Robert.
Robert.
He asks me my name every week. Don't feel bad.
That's okay.
Yeah. She gave me the smile like, you idiot.
I just smiled.
Hey, I'm here again. What's your name? My name is Kirk. We do a podcast.
So do you feel like Robert has these same problems?
I know he does. When he was very little, and he's nonverbal, so he doesn't talk. Mm-hmm. He can't say, you know, this smells bad.
Right.
He can't say that this is painful. But when he was very small, we would go into restaurants, and he would just suddenly have that look of, I'm not comfortable here.
You can
here.
Just tell a mother knows.
Of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, so we would go in these places and then I would become what I called a sensory detective.
Mm-hmm.
And I would look around and I'd try and figure out, is it the smell that's bothering him? Is it the lighting?
Because
sometimes
loud?
Like you'll get a strobe effect in some places where,
the
you know, you've got candlelight or fluorescent lighting. You get that kind of thing. Or is it, you know, the noise from the refrigerator or the fluorescent lights I was really sensitive to that when I was little.
Yeah,
I don't like it. That just really annoying kind of sound that's really imperceptible to a lot of people.
It's like a little hum kind of thing.
And you're just like, it's driving me insane.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. So I was really sensitive as to what was making him on edge. And it could just be an energy. There was one time we went into a restaurant and he just was really uncomfortable. He just really didn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to piece together what it was. And there was a couple in the corner having an argument.
Uh-huh.
And it was that energy he was sensing. He just didn't want to be anywhere near it.
Huh.
So I find that fascinating.
That is fascinating.
But I've also become more sensitive to things like that as well. So,
right.
I mean, I've always had a pretty sharp olfactory system, which is good because when you're a mom and there's things like, you know.
As he soiled himself.
Exactly. I was like, how do I put that nicely. Oh, yeah, but that's when there's sickness issues, we need to check.
What's an olfactory system?
Smell.
Your sense of smell.
Oh. Learning a lot.
Yeah.
She gave me another you're a dumbass smile.
It was
sense
in
of
love.
Smell.
I think that's just my natural look.
It was in love. It was in love.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're adorable.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
He's very handsome. We said every week, if there's producers listening to this, he's auditioning for a lot of things right now, and this could be his year. This could be his breakout year. And then when they need a mailman for that sitcom he's on, I'll be the mailman that comes out and shows my face. Hey, Graham.
Cheat. Yeah.
You guys are both very
Who my wife
I'm
cheats on me with. Hey.
I didn't say that.
Damn mailman. I need two. He's too handsome to be a mailman.
I need two lines so I can headline in the Midwest. That's all I need. Yeah.
As seen on TV.
Here's your mail.
Here's your mail. I look directly at the camera.
Get the hell out of
Walk
here.
Out.
Fair enough.
Have a nice day.
Yeah.
I have a bad feeling about lines. That mailman. Yeah. I don't like that mailman at all.
So let's talk a little bit about your show, Momatism.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any plans to be bringing it to North America?
I know
we talked about this a little bit last time.
Yeah, no, I'm hoping to have a venue set for April, which is World Autism Awareness Month.
Great. And you premiered your show April 2nd.
Premiered? Is that what you said?
Premiered.
Premiered.
I thought you said it in a French accent for some reason. I'm deaf. Go ahead.
Maybe Canadians say it different.
How did you say it?
Premiered.
Yeah, premiered.
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 I just bust your chops.
So I did it the first time.
Thank you. Autism Day at the Bath Festival.
The Bath Comedy Festival.
Bath Comedy Festival. It's not just a festival of baths.
No.
No.
Home Depot puts it on.
Yeah. So that's awesome. And we got in a little bit into this before we pressed record.
Graham asked a great question.
Yeah. You did it for a reason. Like we made this podcast because we felt we had things we wanted to say and really no one to talk to them about. Why did you make your one woman show?
Well, I think probably because we had that, you know, all of us have experience with autism beyond, like, before the computer was invented.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you knew that your brother was a little different, and mm-hmm. we knew our children were a little bit different. But there was no internet back then. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't the information sharing that's available now. Nobody was doing a podcast back then.
No.
And I kind of became an advocate for my son, but also for the education of people. Because I walked around, and people would just look at me like, I'm a bad mother. Why is your child behaving this way?
Why does he pull it together?
Yeah. And when I got the diagnosis, I was like, finally, there's a reason.
Right.
You know, so then I wanted to explain what was happening, why he was having meltdowns.
I can't imagine how frustrating that would have been before the diagnosis and just being like, what?
You just think, I must be a bad mother. I can't, I don't know what I'm doing. And of course, I'm a first-time mom. And so all of my suspicions that something was a little different with this kid, they're just, oh no, Mrs. Belander, you're just paranoid. You're a first-time mom. It's fine. It's fine. Like, I don't think so, but okay.
Right.
So, but learning the different things about it, like for me, I had to do my research in a library.
Wow.
You know, people don't even go to libraries anymore.
Like paper Google.
Homeless people do to use the internet.
Yeah, that's true. Homeless people go to the library to use Google.
Use Google, yeah.
Exactly. But as you know, books aren't really updated as quickly as, you know, Wikipedia.
Right.
They are still full of bad information, just like Wikipedia, but, you know, nonetheless. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the information I was getting couldn't be accurate in my mind. I just thought this isn't right. And so I was very instinctive with my parenting, and I learned a lot from my child, rather than trying to figure out, you know, why he's not fitting in with the what to expect when you're expecting kind of things.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, I found that a lot of people were curious about it, and they wanted to ask, but they're like, well, I don't want to ask you now because you're, you know, clearly dealing with this.
Sure.
I don't want to add to your stress. And I thought, you know, as a performer, this is a way that I can reach not just one person at a time. So not just every one-on-one that I have, every interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing that anyway. So if I'm in the supermarket and there's somebody in the queue ahead of me and they're like, well, what's going on with your kid?
Right.
I'd be more than happy to explain that, hey, you know, it's really noisy in here. Mm. And that bothers him because he's got sensory defensiveness. And they're like, what does that mean? I said, well, he's got sensory integration disorder. And they're like, what does that mean? And then I have to explain all of these terms because I got really excited because I learned a lot of different terms. Yay, I'm so smart. Anyway, so, but then I realized that I have this opportunity. If I tell it in the right way,
right,
I can reach people and I can do 30, 40, 50, 100 people at a time. Yeah. Maybe thousands of people at a time, rather than just the one-on-one. But I have the luxury because I'm a performer and I enjoy a lot of things about my son, so I can spin it in a nice way.
Yeah, that's good. That's
positive way, yeah.
Yeah, and
exactly,
and
the point of this,
yeah,
the mission statement of this podcast.
I agree.
Is that what you just said?
Cool.
So it's good to have you. Like, I'm glad we're on the same level. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Anyway, go on.
No, it's fine. But you asked a question earlier before we started recording about people not receiving it well or in the right way or whatever, and I mentioned the critics. I actually did get
one review.
Yeah.
I thought you were making a joke.
And it was, no, it was actually one of the critics didn't quite get what I was doing, and she was like, does she not understand that this is a serious topic and it's not really comedy? Do you not really understand I'm using comedy to educate people?
Does she not listen to the show, or
she was there writing. I'm sure she was distracted by, you know, her deadline or whatever. But I just thought it was funny. And I talked to another friend, Kerry Marks, who's a great comedian over in England, and he wrote a show the year before about his heart attack. And he got the same type of review where, you know, he's not taking it seriously enough. I'm like, well, it's my heart attack. I should be able to, you know, write any way about it I want. And I kind of feel the same way about, you know, my son and my experience, because I'm not making fun of him. I'm just sharing my experience. And even things like some of the research that was just like, you're kidding me, right?
Like what?
I thought they were hilarious. Well, you know, the whole movement of Cure Autism Now.
I've heard of it. I'm really not that familiar with it.
Yeah, they want to do that. They want to find the gene and isolate it and wipe out all of the autism. And I just think that's very scary, because you'd be wiping out a lot of really interesting people.
Yeah, we actually talked about this last episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
basically eugenics.
This comes up every once in a while on this podcast, actually. Somebody tries to do that. It's very disturbing. It's very disturbing. A lot of interesting people would be wiped out. A lot of important people that help move along society in a very important way, you know, would have been eliminated. I think like Albert Einstein could have been tested, you know, on the spectrum.
Well,
you
Leonardo know what I mean? Da Vinci.
Yeah.
Well, we don't need him.
We don't need those bums.
And most of Silicon Valley.
Yeah. I mean,
a lot of the entrepreneurs. Yeah.
Totally. Totally.
I mean, there's speculation about Bill Gates, a number of people that.
And Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs.
Both of them.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. It's kind of a small detour from this, but like, you did it, now we're like maybe a year and a half ago. And so you obviously, in the course of a month, you modify your set, your show, you keep getting better, obviously, your stand-up. So then you...
I appreciate that.
So your last show is probably your best show, right? Versus your first show, I would guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you've had a year and a half to think about it.
Yeah.
What would you do differently?
One of the reasons I was hesitant to do it here in the States was that I thought, you know, because the show I did over in England, so a lot of it is based on my experience with the English schools and what they did. But they're so specific, they're so personal, that the more personal your show becomes, the more universal it becomes.
Absolutely.
So, but I was worried that I was going to have to change a lot of things because the American school system is slightly different, or the special needs system in America. Mm-hmm. It's just a different kind of, you know, system from the UK, and I thought, they're not going to get this. So the first couple things that I did when I got here was I watched a bunch of documentaries that America's been producing and information that they have here. And sadly, it's not that different.
Okay.
There's not that much I need to change.
Why is that sad? Is it not, the situation's not good in the UK?
I just thought the information would have moved along faster.
Right.
I don't know. I just think
in 2 years you're thinking better information.
Well, you know, we've got the internet superhighway and all that stuff. I just thought, I thought America was going to be so far ahead. And because it's autism, it's about the same.
Yeah.
You know?
I think awareness has gone up in the past few years.
Oh, there's definitely more awareness.
I do too.
Like, I think that's pretty palpable. Like,
but there's also, because the diagnosis is better, because there's so much more of it around, more people. And especially in America, they're more open and more comfortable about talking about it. But you get a lot of, oh yeah, my son is. Oh yeah, my nephew is. Oh yeah, my neighbor is. Oh yeah. So there's a lot of exposure to autism. And there's not that weird sort of secret you know, I don't know that my neighbor might be.
Yeah.
But I don't want to ask.
Right. When I was a kid, and no one knew what autism meant when I told them.
Right.
Nobody.
Yeah.
And now it's.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
When someone, I'm serious. When the doctor told me, I was probably 20. Let me think. I was 24 because my son. Yeah, so I was 24 years old. So we didn't have any history in my family. I don't know anything about anything. I'd never heard of bipolar. I'd never heard anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look it up, and there was no. The internet was barely a thing. It was still the
right.
Like when you call up that whole using discs on AOL. Yeah, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean that's like the '90s. Around the same time that I was going to the library, going, "What is this autism thing?" And it was a very small part of a small chapter in a mental health book, and a lot of it was lumped in with. Just like whatever, schizophrenia and bipolarism, which ADHD. I don't even think was, ADHD wasn't even a thing yet.
No.
Nobody mentioned that yet because they didn't know it was a spectrum disorder.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I found really interesting was the guy who did the research on it knew about it in the 40s. Mm-hmm. But his research didn't actually come to light until the 90s.
Wow.
You know, and he was the one that was like, no, this is a spectrum disorder. And people are like, what does that mean? So I found that fascinating. But yeah, I mean, back 20, 25 years ago, there just wasn't any information.
Did you, it must have been, was there anybody that you could commiserate over it with? Somebody else? Was it hard to find other people who had autistic children to talk to? Was there any sense of community back then? You can weigh in on this too.
Whether there was or not, I don't think I was in a position to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I happened to be in a situation where I was part of the military family at that point, and there weren't a lot of military families dealing with the same issue, and I wasn't really out in the community enough.
So you're just out on an island by yourself.
Yeah.
Man.
And I think that's why I did go to the library and I did do so much research.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, I had plans when I had my child. I was going to, you know, teach him to speak. Do you remember the book Baby Signs?
Yeah.
And you could teach your infant how to sign?
Mm-hmm. We tried the sign language.
Did you?
I'm signing right now, but you can't see it on the thing. But yeah, we tried. Yeah, we tried that.
Well, I had this brilliant idea because you can teach babies.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, babies lose their memory of birth. Mm-hmm. I was going to teach him sign language so that I could interview him and ask him about what it was like being born.
How'd that go?
I was genuinely going to do that. He wasn't signing. He really had no interest in plans. Yeah.
No. I'm guessing he had his own agenda.
He learned cookie and he learned, the food stuff my son would do. What's candy? He would do candy. He would do cookie. He would do, Oh, brother.
And my son does sign a bit, but it's British Sign Language, and now they live in Virginia, which is weird because now he's got to either teach his teachers.
It's Appalachian Sign Language out there. It's different.
Well, you know, it is different. It like is different. Sign language
America
is different
in
America and Britain. France is a different sign language. Mm-hmm. I think every country is different.
American Sign Language is closer to French Sign Language because the guy who started it in America was French.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking off knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
See?
It's not just good looking.
I know.
Also smart.
I was listening to some NPR a little while ago, and okay.
I was going to say, jump in on this, that we're talking about art, and we got another message from Chris Klinch, K-L-I-C-H, Klinch, and he was talking about a few things, but one of the things he was talking about was going to see that show that was on Broadway, The Mysterious Case of the Dog of the Nighttime.
Great book.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, the book was great. I haven't seen the show. And then I guess at the heights of the show where it's like really loud, he writes the stage.
So they made a Broadway play based on the book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Amazing.
And it's just in New York right now. But the stage and theater are filled with speakers and lights that go off whenever the main character feels overloaded. It really shows non-ASD people what it's like to have Asperger's. It was awesome. I hope it tours.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That sounds like a bigger version of the art we talked about on the top of the show.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to do that. That was such a good book, like in terms of getting you inside somebody else's head.
Super well written.
Yeah.
Sounds obvious, but yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of important.
If you haven't read it and you're listening to this podcast, you would like it.
And if you know the author, give him our number.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was in London for a while. I didn't get a chance to see it when it was there, but a lot of people who knew I was doing the show were like, oh my God, you've got to see this one.
My only problem with the book is, okay, because I said this like two episodes ago or three episodes ago, is like if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism.
Yeah.
So like, because then people see that show and like, oh, and I'm like, no, my son doesn't do any of that stuff.
Right.
So that's my only little caveat.
I remember... this is sort of linking back what we were talking about with Jennifer about learning about autism back in the day before the internet also is my parents, when my brother was first diagnosed officially, he was probably like 11 or so. And I remember they just gave my parents like VHS tapes, you know, and like, I remember my parents watch with my parents.
Wait, so what year was this? I'm sorry.
I would say that this 80 was...
85? 80?
No, this is probably 98, maybe.
Oh, okay.
And...
wait, I'm sorry. Your brother's diagnosed when? How old was he?
He was about 11.
Okay. Okay.
So we've been dealing with it and it was obvious for a while, but we didn't, you know... They went to countless doctors and...
It's about the same time my son, 98,
Yeah, and then the doctors really didn't know what it was or they wouldn't say anything. They're like, we don't know what this is.
Right.
And I remember when I was a kid, I'd watch him from... in like the hospital, I'd watch him from like a two-way mirror or whatever. What is it? Yeah. And then, you know, they'd be, you know... doing therapy where they help you hold things.
Sounds like ABA.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but anyway, they just gave a bunch of VHS tapes to my parents. Like, watch this. This is what autism is. I remember my parents watching it, and I watched it with my parents. My dad just looked at my mom and goes, "Peter's not like this."
Right.
What the heck? That's not my son. You know.
Yeah.
So it's like. It is a gigantic spectrum. No two are the same.
Well, that's why
it's so difficult.
Yeah, on this podcast, I like because Peter and my son aren't living the same life. I think it's good to talk about both ends. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when Robert was originally diagnosed, the doctor who was working with him, she said, you know, first of all, I'm just going to give you it's pervasive developmental disorder. Rather than autism, because the good news is he's not very autistic. Like, what does that even mean? But there are certain things that he did that were definitely autistic tendencies, and that's what it looks like. That's classic autism.
Right.
But then there were other things that were like, we don't recognize that. That's different.
That's one of the most frustrating parts of it too. I think that some of the stuff, this flappy arms for my son, he does the flappy arms.
Yeah,
does,
mine did that as well. Tippy toes. Yeah.
What's flappy arms and tippy toes?
Like flaps his arms.
And
then like he likes to walk around his tippy toes.
Yeah.
It's like a real clear early sign about two, and they just.
We used to call him Angel Baby.
Yeah.
Because he would really walk around on his tiptoes like he was trying to fly.
Yeah. And then there's some other stuff.
Yeah.
That like I think it becomes more apparent as they get older. Like, well, that's not. You know, the progress isn't there, though.
So yeah.
I had a point. I forgot. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's good.
I could edit that part out.
Nah.
The classic signs of autism you were talking about.
Right. Oh, one of the things that makes it hard is that a lot of these kids, or at least my son, a lot of people have a few things going on.
Yeah.
So I've got another friend who's...
Right,
he's got a 30-year-old son. His son's clearly autistic. Like he does flappy, he does a few other things, but he's also deaf, and then he's got something else. And so then you're trying to teach an autistic deaf kid sign language because he doesn't talk, and there's a few other sensory issues. And so like, when you get the two or three things in a row, it's like, then it gets real complicated.
Yeah.
In the show, I ask the general audience. I mean, it's not so much an issue nowadays because Rain Man is such an old movie, but it's classic and everybody kind of they've heard of it. But one of the things I ask is how many of you people know about autism because of this? And then I have to re-educate them that actually everything that you remember is the savant qualities, not the autism.
Right. Yeah.
Which is a completely different thing. And most people don't realize how rare savantism is.
Yeah.
Like I think... Right now, 1 in 100 or 1 in 60 are on the autistic spectrum, and there are only 100 documented cases of savantism in the world today. Like, that's how rare it is.
Right. Okay. You know? I didn't realize it was that rare.
Yeah. It's just, it's something completely different. Some savants have autism. Some autistic people have Souvantism. Not all of them do. Just like the obsessive compulsive disorder. Mm. Not all of them are, but they have a tendency to, because that's a comforting, repetitive behavior. Like, but it's not. Know.
You lump it together like that. You're like, well, some are tall.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're all tall. Yeah. No.
There's a lot going on.
Well, and then I have a friend who does, because she's advocating for female autism, because the diagnosis has to be different for females, because just being a female, you mask the symptoms differently. So they go undiagnosed for much, much longer.
That is interesting.
Yeah. My friend Ollie Edwards, she does a bunch of stuff, but she wrote a book called Why Can't Normal Be Normal? And she was talking about, because she actually is on the spectrum herself, but her daughter was being diagnosed and the doctor just said, so when were you diagnosed? She's like, I haven't been. So she's got her final diagnosis and she actually is on the spectrum, which she kind of knew. She's like, yeah, that makes total sense. But
talk about the coping mechanism for females, though.
Please. Well, I think, because I also have a friend, Ria Lina, who's another comedian. She did a show called Special, talking about how she just thought she was different. And then she got the diagnosis and she realized, oh, I'm not different. I'm just autistic, you know, so it kind of rocked her world a bit because she didn't realize that there were these things. But one of the things that females tend to do, because they tend to be more social just genetically, so they will mask their symptoms to fit in more so than a man will, more so than an autistic boy will. It's just for whatever reason. So they learn how to look normal, to act more socially acceptable, even though they feel incredibly awkward in their head. But she said she's got a whole, like, it's a Rolodex of learned behaviors, and she has to go to it until it became a habit. But things like, you know, when people shake your hand, how do you react? And when they say certain things, it doesn't mean anything other than what they're saying. You know, how do you do? Like, that's not a trick question.
Right.
You know, but language things and social things. But girls react slightly differently. So what we're using is a template in how to diagnose boys.
Right.
But then it doesn't work on the female. And so the females that have autism, unless they're very severe, you know, and and they have a bunch of other things. And again, this goes into the multiple sort of diagnoses.
My girlfriend pointed out that there must be more male cases of autism, because you don't see.
It's like 5 to 1.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
But maybe it's less than 5 to 1 because so many are being.
Maybe.
Because the girls are being missed.
Women are smarter and sneakier.
Hide it better.
We have our wily ways.
But you know, like, I have a brother who has dyslexia, and you can, like, if you can't remember the order of words, you can mask it if you just memorize everything.
Yes.
You can memorize. Believe looks like this. Like,
yes.
You just memorize.
I'm a little dyslexic, and that's why I can't spell.
Right.
Because so, I also have a bad memory.
Okay.
So believe is just
a bunch of letters.
I'm just winging it. Restaurant.
Restaurant.
We'll see.
Starts with an R.
Yeah.
And ends with a T.
Tourist. I don't know.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think people do try to mask. Yeah. Of course.
Well, and if you don't know what's wrong with you, you just go, well, I want to fit in, so how do I do that?
Well, the other thing is, I assume you don't know that nobody else has to do this. You're like, well, we all just memorize it, right, boys?
Yeah.
Right? We don't all memorize everything? That's not what's happening?
Well, we all do that. We all have that. But don't you think exactly like I think?
Exactly.
So how do you not understand this? Exactly. I mean, I do this in my, you know, day job all the time. I'm like, how do you not understand this?
Right.
Oh, yeah, because I'm weird. Never mind.
Yeah.
You know, but I've had that conversation. And one of the nicest things with the feedback from my show is I didn't realize that the people who are on the spectrum will pick up different things that I'm saying. And they laugh at the setup because I'm trying to translate things for a neurotypical audience.
Mm-hmm.
And they would come back and they'd be like, oh, my gosh. Now I understand what my mom was talking about. And I love those moments.
That's great.
Well, I think that we covered it for today. Well, I don't know. Thank you so much. That was really interesting.
Yeah, we really appreciate you coming.
I love being here. Thanks.
Yeah, autism and art is we can get back into this. There's so much to talk about.
I think we should come back to this a few weeks. Yeah.
Definitely. We should find other artists and you know, invite Jennifer back, talk about it. But there are so many, if you are a person with autism listening who is an artist, or, send us your stuff.
Yeah, or you know somebody. And you have family that's on the spectrum.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Either or.
And you use it to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. So, let us know. Message us on Facebook or write us an email. Our email is autasticpodcast@gmail.com. You can also reach us at Kirk Smith Comedy on Twitter and at Graham K Comedy on Twitter as well. And we have a Facebook page, which is very exciting. We're putting more and more pictures up there. Please remember to like us on Facebook. And Jennifer Bielender, is there any social media addresses that you would like to promote?
At Momatism. And at J. Bielender.
Definitely look to see Momatism when it comes out, hopefully this April, in a theater near you. Any closing statements?
Last Kirk? Quick thing, guys. Our numbers are going up again.
Up.
And we really appreciate what's happening is people are sharing this with friends and family that they think might connect with us. So mm-hmm. The biggest thing you guys do for us is tag your friends in the comments section of one of the links to the podcast or subscribe for them, or that's how it's getting shared. And we really appreciate it. Just please keep sharing this with people you think that might connect with this and might be touched by this.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes.
I concur. You concur?
Once again, thanks, Jennifer. Thanks very much, everybody. Thanks for listening, guys and gals. Bye-bye.